Welcome to Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran. I'm your host, Dr. Arasi Maran. This podcast is dedicated to transforming your health through evidence-based medicine. I'm your host, and as an interventional cardiologist, I've spent over a decade treating patients with complex cardiovascular disease. And with that experience came with, I am just treating a small problem, and maintaining health requires a look beyond the cardiac cath lab. Therefore, hence this podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. Amina Goodwin, a double board certified physician in internal medicine and infectious disease, and the creator of the BEAM blueprint for blood sugar management. Dr. Goodwin has developed this powerful approach after more than a decade of treating patients with complex infections in Mississippi, where she observed how high blood sugar often hindered recovery. As a native of Antigua and Barbuda, she's a dedicated healthcare professional and also a mother to an eight-year-old. She brings in both clinical expertise and personal understanding to her work. Dr. Goodwin is known for empowering patients and privately coaching clients through informed lifestyle choices that enable them to live their healthiest life while taking the least amount of medication, which is my favorite part. Dr. Goodwin, welcome to the show. I'm excited to dive into today's topic, this complex connection between blood sugar management and overall health resilience.
Thank you for having me, Arasi. Great to be here, spreading some good info to the Sing audience. Yeah.
Yes. So can you tell me, you know, infectious disease doctors are not usually into kind of overall health. You know, they have, like interventional cardiologists, very myopic focus. So how did you get into a more overarching space of blood sugar and immune system and health?
Yes, so I came here, good question, of course, Arasi, because yeah, people like infectious disease doctor, what on earth do you know about, you know, sugar, diabetes, etc., you know? So basically, I came here to Mississippi from Antigua in 2013 and very quickly realized that, oh my goodness, like most of my patients, they are being referred to me in the hospital because they are diabetic. Like at any one point in time, when I looked at it, at least 50% of them would be diabetic, okay? And that's why they would have any of the multiple complications that they came in with infection-wise. So I realized, okay, I was, you know, had to speak to them about sugar and maintaining normal blood sugar levels and so on and so forth. But then one day, in my mind, right, my observation was that a patient I was speaking to in ICU about his bad chest infection and his diabetes out of control because he wasn't taking his medicines. And I thought to myself that he, or at least I saw him looking at my pocket, which had a bottle of juice. And I personally had always been drinking juice and, you know, all the sweet things. And basically, I refer to myself as a sugar addict, to be honest, right? And growing up, I even never drank water. And I used to say, literally remember telling my mother, I hope I never become diabetic because I cannot live without sugar. But at that point in time, when I was counseling this young man, and he looked at me, I thought he was probably judging me and saying, but she's a hypocrite. She's telling me to cut out sugar, but then look at her with that bottle of sweet juice in her pocket. And so that was the instant for me where I was like, okay, well, maybe the reason why he, you know, and my patients in general are having a problem is the same reason I cannot give up sugar. And maybe it's not as simple as just saying, okay, you know, you need to stop drinking sweet things and eating sugar, right? And then is when I went on this journey of discovery for myself about, okay, well, maybe I should do what I'm telling my patients to do so I can experience it myself and be able to tell them confidently that this is possible. But of course, I realized that, hey, this is not as easy as to just do it, right? Because sugar is hidden all over the place and it's in everything. And then it's just like one thing led to the other on the journey. I subsequently, you know, when I, you know, started learning and so on, picked up a book by Dr. Mark Hyman, who you've probably heard of. And in that book, one of the statements early on talked about how diabetes is not the only thing that arises from high blood sugar, but polycystic ovaries. And he spoke about how these things are going on years before you actually get diabetes, right? So I realized in that instant, oh my goodness, like I'm actually having problems myself, you know, polycystic ovaries and so on, even though I'm not diabetic. And so it's just one thing leading to another with education and then trying to get my patients better and then working on myself so I'm no longer a hypocrite. And then that culminated in me saying, okay, I'm going to write a book about all this because, you know, rather than saying the same thing over and over to select people that are, you know, seeing me, hey, how about if we write a book, put all this knowledge, experience and so on in a book so that anybody can have access to it. And the goal, of course, is to prevent people from getting to where they're in the hospital, sick and basically struggling for life, right? So that's kind of a nutshell how I got to where I am now.
That is, you know, ridiculously similar to my own personal journey. You wrote a book, I started this podcast, and I am still a recovering chocolate addict, which is pretty much a sugar addiction. And after my third baby, and which was closer to me being getting close to 40, I was like, this has to stop. This dependence on chocolate needs to stop. And I went on a personal journey myself and literally had to read off. It was like peeling an onion. Why do I need chocolate and why do I need sugar, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, when I actually finally quit and kind of had control over my addiction, my fellows came to me and said, what are you taking? What's going on with you? Why are you so active? And why are you so, you seem very different. And that's when I was like, man, I was living in a foggy environment, and the fog was caused by probably my elevated blood sugars or something like that. And it led to a personal journey, and I was trying to figure out, how do I put this in a space where the people want it, it's always there. And that's why this podcast. So when you stole the story, I was like, oh my God, it's the same story. We are all, you know, stuck in this high sugar environment and running this treadmill, trying to find help.
Exactly. All of us. And it's, you know, our patients struggle, and they're the ones who happen to be in the hospital. But I believe a lot of us secretly have this struggle as well. And we hide it, right? So yeah, it's a serious thing.
You have a unique perspective, right? You, as an infectious disease specialist, and blood sugar goes up in your infection, etc. Apart from your patient making you feel guilty, did you notice a connection between blood sugar management and recovery from infection? Did that help you formulate your plan?
Oh, yeah, with my patients. So essentially, we saw that those who, because a lot of these, you know, we talk about frequent flyers in the hospital, right? So those who come back over and over and over again over years with similar or same problem, right? So I had the advantage of being in the same place for 10 years. So, and as the only infectious disease doctor as well, it was me seeing all of them. So I could see the trajectory. And for sure, those who just were not able to get that sugar under control and keep it under control were the ones who kept coming back in with new infections, you know, more parts of the body being amputated, right? And then just learning more and more and realizing that insulin resistance itself. So, okay, maybe the blood sugar might be controlled, the A1C might be normal, but then these people would come in with a stroke or heart attack. And oftentimes too, you know, individuals, family members would say, but they were always healthy. They were never sick, right? And so gaining the understanding that behind the scenes, even though surface wise, the numbers look good, but behind the scenes, there's that big problem of insulin resistance going on. And that is kind of driving all the inflammation and all those issues leading up or culminating with a bad stroke or bad heart attack. So definitely very, very interlinked.
You know, I give this analogy to my patients that having elevated blood sugars is like a forest fire. And it literally, I mean, even cancer can start in one organ, and only after a particular amount, it spreads to the other organs. But elevated blood sugar, it affects your hair follicle all the way to your tippy toes. And no organ is spared from the flash fire effect of the elevated blood sugars, right? But patients, when I say that, and they're like looking at me like, I'm like, please tell me somebody has already discussed this with you, you know, and I cannot be your first doctor as a cardiologist to be talking about the effects of high blood sugar. And they're like, no, we never knew. We thought as long as we take our blood sugar medications and my glucometer says my blood sugar is normal, I'm fine. But I'm like, no, it does not affect like that. And medicines for blood sugar, yes, it's good and it's essential, it's life-saving, but it's also like putting makeup to cover acne scars or active acne, and you need to improve your skin health so that you don't get acne and therefore you don't need a lot of makeup. And they find it very like they're surprised that it's never been discussed to them like that. So I think your approach sounds very similar to what I am thinking. So now let's dive into BEAM. What does BEAM stand for? And walk us through the steps of the blueprint.
Sure, of course. Yeah, so it definitely isn't discussed. And the thing is too, honestly, sometimes I think we are able to see say little things, you say, I say, and in general, but it's actually so much, right? And, you know, so many little parts and all. And sometimes too, even all of us, right? We need to hear something more than once. And we know in the healthcare setting, all of us are so overburdened with the amount of patients. So we just cannot do it every single time. We can't do it to the extent where the patient needs it, right? Which is why things like books and, you know, your podcast where people can listen to them over and over again, those things come in handy. But the BEAM blueprint, so essentially the big thing was that, okay, I realized that it's not enough just to cut down sugar. So I started thinking, because I would help people and get, you know, things are doing better and so on. But then there's always, you know, maybe there's like a relapse, or maybe you get your numbers down, maybe A1C down from 30% to 8%, but you just can't get it to that 6.5% level, right? And so I thought to myself, okay, let's think about how does sugar go up in your bloodstream, right? And so in thinking about all the ways sugar can go up, then is when I got to the blueprint. So sugar can go up either because, well, the easiest one to think of is that you get too much sugar going in. You just eat too many things, sweet things, drink too many sweet things, right? That's number one. Number two, it could be that maybe you don't have that much sugar, but the little sugar that you're getting is going in too quickly, right? Because it's basically pure sugar. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing with it. There's no fiber. There's no protein, nothing. It's just plain sugar. So it's going in really rapidly. Okay. And then the third is that, okay, maybe you're not taking in that much or whatever, but whatever you're taking in, you're just not burning it off enough, right? So maybe you're just super sedentary, like people as they retire, or, you know, they retire, they get less sedentary, you get older, more sedentary. And also in addition to being less sedentary, and they go hand in hand, the muscle mass is lost, right? So they get that sarcopenia. So essentially, you have less of those healthy tissues that are going to suck that sugar out of the bloodstream, right? And so you're burning less sugar. So you're having the same amount of sugar that you were taking 10, 20 years before, but you're just not sucking it out of the bloodstream as much as you did before. And so that's one of the reasons why it stays up. And then the fourth reason why blood sugar might stay high is because you might be eating right, you're eating totally right, you're exercising, right? But your body's making too much sugar, right? So we know that with stressful situations, you generate sugar because of that cortisol from the stress response, right? And so you can be doing everything right, but you have this underlying stress causing you to constantly be making cortisol. And I spoke to this doctor once, Amy Vertrees. I actually did a podcast with her, and she was talking about how she calls stress her cortisol tumor. I don't know if you know Amy Vertrees. She's a surgeon. Anyway, she calls it her cortisol tumor. I thought that was such a good way to put it, right? Because it's just this constant production of cortisol. And sometimes we think of stress as just psychological stress, but overlooked is that chronic stress from a chronic infection or chronic inflammatory condition. People have sleep apnea and chronically have low oxygen levels, right? So all these overlooked reasons for having a chronically stressful environment in your body. So those four things are the ways why sugar would be high in the body, right? In the bloodstream. So if you know how or what causes sugar to go up, then extrapolate it. Okay, then what can we do to reduce the sugar levels and maintain nice stable sugar levels in the bloodstream, right? And that's why I came with the BEAM blueprint, right? Because it's BEAM, so B is burn more sugar. So that's especially your muscles, right? But all tissues of the body obviously will use sugar, right? Muscles take a big chunk. Muscles have, you know, a lot of mitochondria, right? So the tissues in the body that burn the most sugar are those that have the densest or the most highest concentration of mitochondria. And muscle is one of those. All our organs in general are brown fat. So those people jumping in the cold plunges, they're doing that to promote the development of more brown fat. And the reason why that burns more energy is because of the higher concentration of mitochondria compared to the white fat, right? So, but muscles are the one we can have the biggest. We can change that the easiest, theoretically, like depending on how much time we have to go to gym and basically weight training to build those muscles. And if we maintain our muscles, so we might not build the biggest muscles, but if we go out of our way to not lose the muscle mass that we have, as we get older, we are less likely to have sugar going up because we maintain our muscle, and so we can suck that energy in, right? Because even if you're not moving, even if you're not exercising, whatever, just being alive, right? Those muscles that you have are staying alive by sucking that sugar from your bloodstream, right? So B is burn more sugar. Then E is eat less sugar, which we all know about. But the interesting thing, which when I found out about this, and my husband actually mentioned it to me first, but maybe almost 10 years ago, WHO came out with the guideline that for all of us, diabetic or not, we should have no more than 6 teaspoons of added sugar per day. This is added sugar. So this is not naturally occurring sugar in fruits and so on, right? And 6 teaspoons, that's the same as 24 grams. So every 1 teaspoon is 4 grams. So looking at that, all of us probably, if we're not paying attention, we realize that we're having more than the recommended daily allowance of sugar. And I was certainly a huge cup. I mean, I was having almost a quarter or sometimes half a cup of added sugar per day just because of all the things that I was having up until about 10 years ago, right? So eat less sugar means that we are going to now start looking at nutrition labels to see, hey, where is sugar hiding? How much am I taking in? Because sometimes we do things unconsciously because we just don't even realize. So then when you realize, hey, there is maybe a guideline and there is a guideline for, it must be there for a reason, right? Right? Not just diabetics, but all of us, right? And then if you start looking and tracking, is eat less sugar. So the thing about eating less sugar, the big thing is knowing where sugar comes from, right? So a lot of times we might, you know, put away things that are not as sweet, but then if we start paying attention to the labels on the packaged foods that we're eating, we're realizing, you start realizing that almost everything has added sugar. And it's estimated that more than 75% of foods in supermarkets have added sugar, right? So there is a recommendation from the World Health Organization to have no more than 6 teaspoons, which is the same as 24 grams of added sugar per 24-hour period per day, right? And this is regardless of if you're diabetic. Anybody, diabetic or not, should aim to have no more than that, right? So every 1 teaspoon is 4 grams. So when you start looking on the labels, you'll realize that things like Chobani yogurt, which is supposed to be maybe healthy Greek yogurt, that has 16 grams of sugar. So that's 4 teaspoons of sugar from one little container of yogurt. So that's like 2/3 of your daily allowance already gone. If you have a smoothie, you might have 8 teaspoons or more in a smoothie. If you go to Starbucks and have those frappes, you're going to get loads. And so somebody like me back in the day, I was having up to half a cup of added sugar per day, right? So it quickly adds up. So if you're going to eat less sugar, the big thing is to really start paying attention to where your sugar is coming from. And if mostly you're having things that are packaged, you're going to have to look at all those labels, right? So that's in the Beam Blueprint. Then A in the Beam Blueprint is to absorb less sugar. So we spoke about how, yes, you might be taking a little bit, but if the little sugar you're taking, fiber or fat or anything, is going to rush into your system. So you want to have sugar with its natural antidote, right? In many cases, sugar is going to be from plants, right? And the natural antidote is fiber. So your fruits and your vegetables and all those things, your nuts, your seeds, even those things have sugar, right? Carbohydrates, right? But they come with other things. They come with fiber in a lot of cases, protein, fat, okay? As opposed to your juice and those other kind of man-made things, right? So that's absorbing less sugar. And then sometimes you might say, okay, well, I do want to have my starch. I don't want, you know, which you know you're going to get sugar from your starch, but just going out of your way to not have plain starch. Have starch with your meat, have starch with your vegetables, and have starch well balanced out to where you're not having more starch and less protein and so on, right? So always making sure that you have at least the same amount of protein and vegetables on the plate as starch or more, right? So that's where you're going to absorb less sugar. And then the final step of the 4-step Beam Blueprint is to make less sugar. So psychological stress, yes, that might be hard to take care of, but everybody has their own way or has to come up with their own way to sort of manage or handle psychological stress, right? But then I also recommend as well that, hey, maybe it's time to go for a checkup at a doctor to see what might be going on. Get a whole overall check, get some blood work, see what, you know, is there some reason for you to have some inflammatory situation in your body? Do you suffer from chronic joint pains? Could you have rheumatoid arthritis or some other like autoimmune inflammatory condition, right? Do you have chronic hepatitis B, chronic hepatitis C, something that's not treated? Do you have sleep apnea? This is a big problem, sleep apnea. And in many cases, it's not diagnosed. And there's so many people who are not having restful sleep because of sleep apnea, and they have this chronic inflammation. And also sleep apnea, we know, promotes insulin resistance, which ultimately can lead to diabetes, even though it might not, but still that is going on behind the scenes. So those are the 4 steps of the 4-step blueprint. And the point is that, you know, you don't have to do everything every day, right? So there might be a time, a celebration, you're going to have some sugar, you're going to have your dessert, right? That's fine, right? We're human, we're alive, we're meant to enjoy our life. And I always say, you know, as it's known, eating is one of the simple pleasures of life. So this thing about not eating, you know, which is why I kind of have a little problem with some of those new medications, right? Because we're supposed to be able to eat. Like, what's life if we can't enjoy food, right? But you want to get to where you're eating the kinds of foods that will support health and support, you know, the healing of your body and so on and so forth, right? So those are the four steps of the BEAM blueprint.
So I'm going to summarize it because it was fabulous. So BEAM basically stands for burn more sugar. So basically build muscle, strength train, whatever. Eat less sugar. That is basically watch out for added sugars in all your foods. Read your labels. Just be conscious and mindful of what you're putting in your mouth. The third is, I think, the most missed one, which is absorb less sugar and basically pair your starch or sugary stuff with maybe a good fat or a protein, or most importantly, fiber to kind of absorb less sugar. And finally, manage stress. It's fantastic. It's simple. It's actionable and it's applicable. And kudos to you for coming up with this beautiful acronym. And it's truly practical, right? If you can just keep telling yourself, then it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And you know, you talked about Chobani and all the smoothies and Starbucks. I mean, do you remember orange juice, how people were promoting orange juice instead of eating a whole orange where you just got the sugar without any of the fiber? It's like probably the worst. I think we made a lot of dentist practices by promoting sugar, juice drinking, especially for children, you know? Yeah. So it is, you know, this is so simple, but it's so effective. And why do you think there is so much difficulty implementing this?
So the difficulty comes because of how we have been conditioned, I think, as a society to just lean into convenience, right? So everything is set up, especially in North America, I guess, developed countries like this. So I haven't lived in Europe, but I'm sure they have similar problems as well. But it's just convenience, right? Everything is packaged, everything is prepared, and it's just, and everybody's also so busy, right? And we're kind of out of the whole thing where, as a family, everybody would pitch in and help prepare foods. Like when I was growing up, we had to help. Like somebody had to help to, you know, clean, peel vegetables, cut up things. Somebody else had to help to wash dishes and so on and so forth, right? But nowadays, you know, that kind of family living where children are given chores is kind of not as common as back in the day, right? And just the busyness and just awareness. I think the big thing is awareness, because I wasn't aware before either. And so I, you know, kind of fell into the trap of some of these things. But if you don't have that awareness, then you won't have, and you don't realize how seriously it affects your health in the end, because you're going to feel good for maybe decades, right? And if you don't realize that, hey, my health is going to suffer, right? And you'll realize how it is with shortages of physicians and so on and so forth. And so you're just not going to know until it's too late and you're in the hospital and you're sick and then you're scrambling, right? So I think it's just awareness, number one. And then number two, just the convenience. It's just easy to take the path of least resistance, right? And then everybody around you, like when nobody else around you is doing the thing, so then you would look like an odd one, like an oddball, basically. And so it's kind of hard sometimes for people, like being judged and, you know, people thinking you're better than you and so on and so forth. Like I had this patient once and he went to Israel for a trip, like a mission, some kind of trip. He went to Israel and he said that he was so surprised in Israel. He said there were no fast food restaurants. And so he said he was forced to eat well, but then he said, oh my goodness, like it was so good. Like he said, the food tasted so good. He said it tasted so good. He said he actually, he was there for like 10 days. He had more energy and he felt amazing. And he actually lost, I think, 10 pounds. He lost more than 5 pounds. He lost a significant amount of weight for the time that he was there and felt good in the process. And he wasn't restricting himself. He was actually eating, right? And then when he came back to America, he was talking about how good he was doing and so on and so forth. But then a couple months later, he regained all the weight and he said it was just too hard. So here, how it's set up, especially depending on where you're living, maybe it's not as bad in places like California, you know, but in places, Mississippi and some of these other areas. Yeah, you just don't have, like I live in a small town. So for us, we have to basically, we have to cook everything every day. And once a week or less, we might go and have something to eat. But basically, because we're obsessed about eating healthy, we basically cook, but you have to have an obsession and then people would see that you're looking odd and abnormal. And so it's just a lot of pressure all around. It takes great strength, to be honest, to be able to kind of keep up with these healthy ways of eating.
See, I completely understand, but also I also think where there is a will, there is a way. You need to want to get healthy. That's the bottom line. And the thing is, and sometimes you can, there are certain things you can do to make this not so onerous. Number one, meal prep is a great way of planning your food. And I think the for me, the other thing was, yes, food is one of the greatest pleasure, but that should not be your only source of pleasure in life. You have to find other sources of joy in your life, maybe reading a book, going a walk, talking to friends, exercising together, listening to music, dancing. I mean, you know, other different ways, maybe quilting together. I don't know, whatever, you know, speaks to you. And but if eating good food or eating great meals is your only source of pleasure in life, then you're going to end up with, like any other addiction, you're going to end up with sort of seeing the side effects of that particular addiction. Like, for example, if gambling is your only source of pleasure in life, you're going to lose all your money and you're going to have dysfunctional relationships. You know, I think it's important to like how you diversify your portfolio, financial portfolio, you have to diversify your happiness or joy portfolio also and find different sources of happiness so that food is not, you're not fixated. I mean, I grew up in India and food is our, brings people together. We would have this massive lunch, Sunday lunch, a 4 or 5 course meal, several desserts. And by the end of the dessert, we are like, oh, what are we going to have for dinner? So that's how connected, you know, because we were, our only connection point was food. But we were not a family who would play board games, or we would not, you know, we would not go to the beach together. So therefore, we did not diversify our joy portfolio, and therefore food became the only focal point. So I think it's really important. And I realized with that, my own family, the only getting going out we would do is to go for restaurants. Then I said, we have to stop. We are going to go work out together. We're going to play board games together. And thankfully, you know, my kids are all wrestling and therefore they want to go to the gym together, etc. I had to pull my daughter out of it. So you have to sometimes, what do I say, think outside the box, because you have to break the cycle one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, thinking outside the box. But I still do think it's pretty tough, I believe, for the average person. Because remember, too, a lot of the foods that are prepared, they're literally designed to be addictive, right? And so, you know, they're designed to be addictive. And also, too, how the companies label the foods, their labeling is very confusing. And so even like, I just try to avoid as much as possible labeled foods. But a lot of things will have all the things, you know, organic, right? They will have organic on candy. So how do you realize they have an organic on candy? If it's candy, it's candy, right? Non-GMO verified, gluten-free. They have things that are diabetic friendly, but then the first ingredient is maltitol. And that sugar alcohol is going to shoot the blood sugar into the hundreds, 300 plus, right? So I think a lot of people are confused. Like, they're trying, because I just had a patient the other day and he told me literally, he was like at his wit's end and his wife was there and they're really trying. But he's saying that the things that I'm buying that are supposed to help my blood sugar, right? Because even too, I realize that sometimes people feel that these foods don't only prevent their sugar from going up, but they believe the way the marketing is perceived by the individual is that they're supposed to bring the blood sugar down. This is what he was telling me. So he's wearing his continuous glucose monitor and he's seen that the foods that are diabetic friendly and supposed to help him in his mind, they're making his sugar up. So he's frustrated, scared, angry. And so I realized that, you know, there are people out there who are trying. I think a lot of people are trying, but it's just the marketing, right? The conditioning, I think, of population in general, and the fact that you just have to be so outside the box and so different, right? And have people around you that are the same way, because then it's him and his wife, but then they go to other family members. And the belief, which I have that belief, is that if you're not diabetic, you don't have to worry about this. So even I, as somebody who, you know, I should know better, but even I thought that, hey, I don't have to worry about this because, you know, I'm not diabetic and it does not run in my family, right? So I never have to worry. Of course, I saw the light and was able to change. But I think for a lot of people, it's just very, very difficult. And so it takes hearing something like this, getting the education, over and over again. It's not, it can't be one visit, right? So it has to be like a whole shift. And I think it has to be on a community level. But the thing is, like, I don't know how that's going to happen. Community based, like maybe some smaller organization. I think some churches and so on are doing little things, but it's little pockets. And this thing has gone on like this for so long to get society where it is today that I think it's going to be like decades to reverse it, right? So it's very complicated and I don't have a solution, but I just figured like something that's common sense, because I think at the end of the day, we have to go back to basics. We have to go back to nature. We have to go back to basically how the body, how we were meant, what we were meant to eat. We have to go literally back to nature and back to basics. I think that that's the only way, but that's not an easy thing to just start doing for everybody.
You can do something. As I said, you can't be 100% on the wagon or 100% on the line, maybe 80%, you know. So one of the ways I think about this is, you know, 7-day week, you have 21 meals, okay? Can you do 19 good meals? Can you just do 19 good, as close to nature, real food, good healthy fats, prioritized protein, lots of green leafy vegetables, fruits for sugar if you want it, more berries than fruits, and then 2 meals, just let it go. Eat whatever you want, fix your addictions, fix your, vices or whatever you need to. But can you do 19 good meals? And can you just do it for 1 week? Just do it for 1 week, see how you do. Then let's take the next week and, you know, and restart again or reboot again. That's the, hence the name of it. But you're right. It is challenging because we are culturally and society has trained us to do that. And, you have a kid, and I'm sure when you go grocery shopping with the kid, the first thing they run is to this colorful packaging and the hyper palatable foods, and you will have to redirect them throughout the day almost, right?
Yeah, so we, for our son, so he, the big problem was honestly in school, and we were astonished at how much candy was just freely flowing from school. Currently he's homeschooled, he's been homeschooled the past 2 years, but I mean, like, he would come home with candy every day, and they had these so-called treasure boxes, and if they did anything, I guess, good, then they got candy, and they could get more and more candy. And so the culprit was the school, and then also the schools, even though it was a private school, they kind of discourage you from carrying your own food. So we sent his food with him because we insisted that, hey, we're cooking our food every single day. There's no reason for him to get that processed food from school, right? We happen to be vegetarian, not that I promote that as the way to eat, but we do eat seafood, fish. But you know, I think with children, I think it's possible. You have to train them up from the time they're born. So we trained him up because this is how we live as a family. So he actually doesn't eat all the junk food and so on. If he goes somewhere, you know, by a relative, or like if he went to a party, so we allow it then. But my opinion is that schools, they get enough from the outside, so they don't need it in the house. So we just don't keep it in the house. And then if we go out on the once a week or whenever we go out, then, you know, we might have a dessert. We might have, you know, he gets a little ice cream. So it's not that he gets nothing. But in the home, we really limit those things. He doesn't drink juice. It's only water and tea. He might have some honey in his tea, but we just don't keep those things in the house.
You know, the first thing I tell my patients is, because after they have a heart attack, it's such a life-changing environment and they really want to change their life. And that's a perfect opportunity to make some really strong decisions. I'm like, you're going to go home, pick out a garbage bag and go to your pantry, and everything which is not real and it's in cans and which has got high sodium and high sugar. And you have to, if it is made of crinkly paper, and you have to tear it open, you're going to put it in that garbage bag and empty out your thing and go to the grocery store, and do not go to the middle at all. Just shop the periphery of your grocery store and just try it and see how it goes. And as I said, 19 meals. Can you do 19 good meals? And then you can go from there.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a good approach. Just kind of bit by bit, you know, growing on the gains that you had from the previous week, because it is overwhelming. And that's where for some people, they give up as well, because they feel like, oh my goodness, like I have to make all these changes now. Right. So just encouraging them one change at a time, bit by bit.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you didn't get here in one day, and therefore you're not going to normalize everything in 1 week either. And one good, like how one bad meal can't fix everything and one good meal can't fix everything also. You need to do it long enough. And there's one thing which is very interesting, and I think you're the right person to talk about this. People don't realize blood sugar, balanced blood sugar levels can affect your immune function and therefore your ability to fight infections. Can you talk about that connection?
Yeah, so if the blood sugar is high, right, the more the blood sugar goes high, the more it negatively impacts the immune system, right? We all know about how, you know, stress causes lazy white blood cells. So they just don't work as efficiently, right? But the more you have all this stress from the high blood sugar, the weak immune system gets. Additionally, germs, right, microorganisms, right, they thrive on a sugary environment. So the glucose is food for the germs as well, especially bacterial infections, right? Sometimes with high blood sugar as well, you have overgrowth of yeast. So we all know that diabetics have are more prone to yeast infections on the skin, and then it can get to the point where it gets into the bloodstream. And as much as we believe that blood yeast infections are rare, it's mainly people who are, you know, on certain treatments, nutritional treatments and so on in the hospital, I have seen cases where they come in from the community with a yeast infection in the blood, right? I literally have seen this. All the rare things, at least 10, 20 years ago when in medical school, when these things don't happen, and we're seeing these things now, and it is related directly, though in the ones I've seen, to people who have these high blood sugar levels, right? Just on and on and on at home. So it absolutely does negatively impact the immune system. And then when your immune system is weak, you don't only get infections, but you are also at risk for cancer. So we know with insulin resistance that there's a high incidence of certain types of cancers, and it's because these cancer cells escape the immune system. So infections, yes, and then cancer. And I always see cancer as behaving so much like invasive infections. It's incredible to me how similar those two conditions are.
And I mean, for me, cancer is a metabolic disease. You know, yes, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, there is genetic predisposition, but cancer is a metabolic disease. And the fact that we use PET scanning, where you're looking at radioactive glucose uptake to figure out where you have cancer, tells you the cancer cell lives off sugar, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not up for the fad diets and things like that, but I the way I de-addicted myself was with the ketogenic diet, and it made a big difference with me. Then I realized, yes, I can't do it for the rest of my life. How can I put it in a place where, yes, I you know, may not be in ketosis, but I can limit myself, you know, and that kind of eventually worked for me in general. But there are a lot of people who propose ketogenic diets for cancer patients, and the epilepsy ketogenic diet connection itself is such an amazing story. And for listeners who might not know, people who have seizures, they have found to have require less seizure medications if they follow a low sugar ketogenic diet itself. You know, so do you have success stories? I mean, can you give me some practical stories where this Beam Blueprint changed people's life?
Of course. So one of the ones I really love, just because of how her doctor and her nurse, the nurses at her medical office reacted, is this lady. She was a nurse, and she came, she was like, you know, diabetic, and had just high A1C, like really for a long time, too long, especially as a nurse, right? And when she came to me, her A1C was 13%. It had been 13% for a while. Now, for the listeners who don't know, in a person who is metabolically normal or fit, their A1C should be less than 5.4 to 5.7%, just low in that range, right? And the pre-diabetes range is like 5.7 to 6.5%, or to 6.4%, and 6.5% and above is diabetic, right? So hers was over 13%, right? And so she was ready to do something, and we implemented this, and she was ready. And so she took the steps and so on and so forth, gradually bit by bit. But for her, within 3 months, her A1C actually decreased to 9%. So her A1C decreased by 4 percentage points in just a matter of 3 months. And the funny part about it is that when she went to the doctor to get her numbers done and so on and so forth, and they're like, well, Keisha, we think we got your result, but we think they mixed up the blood, because we don't think this is your result, right? Because it says 9%, but like, because she had never been below 10% for a long time. So she's like, actually, that is my result, and I have been doing something, right? I have been working with someone, right? And so they were literally stunned, right? To the point where they thought that surely this is a mistake, it's somebody else's blood. And then she contacted me again 3 months later and said, hey, you know, I just want to let you know, doc, that even though I'm not where I'm supposed to be, I'm down to 8%, right? So she went from over 13% to 8% in a period of just 6 months. Felt better, lost a few pounds, clearly went down on her insulin a lot. Because the thing about insulin too, we know, you know, that it makes people gain weight. Everybody who takes insulin, that they gain weight the moment they start insulin. And the problem is insulin resistance, but then you're on insulin, so that makes it worse. And so you need more and more and more insulin. So it's a vicious cycle. Then I have this other lady, another good example here. She was having instant oatmeal for breakfast. Another nurse. I love my nurses. And she was having instant oatmeal and she felt, she was diabetic. Every morning, mid-morning, she would always need a snack. She actually kept M&Ms of all things, but she felt like she just needed a pick-me-up because she felt like maybe she was going to go low. And so we went through everything and I said, you know, okay, you like oatmeal, but how about if we put more? Instead of that instant oatmeal, let's use the regular rolled oats because it's whole rolled oats, right? And let's stop using fat-free milk. She was using fat-free milk, right? Let's stop using fat-free milk. Let's use whole milk so we can have the benefit of the fat in naturally occurring fat in the whole milk. It's there for a reason, right? And then I told her also add some berries to your oatmeal and also add some chopped pecans. In Mississippi, they like pecans. So add some chopped nuts. So make it more rich. You have your fat, good fat from the milk and from the nuts. You have your fiber. And you have nutrients as well, phytonutrients. And she was kind of shocked in the beginning, hesitant, because a lot of times what I realized is that a lot of people are kind of hesitant with to include full fat things in their meals and fatty things. They're like, but that's bad for me. That's bad for my heart. And so they're very hesitant. And so I was like, just try it, right? And she, in 2 weeks, right, her energy levels improved. She no longer needed to have a mid-morning snack, right? And she lost 5 pounds in 2 weeks. Right. And she said, oh, my goodness, like you are right. Like this works. Right. So for her, she absorbed less sugar. Right. Because she was having more fat and all those things. So she was thinking, oh, my, I need to eat small amounts more frequently. And she was thinking, my, this is too much. You're telling me to eat too much. Like, I'm, you know, it's going to make me gain even more weight. So just including more, but more wholesome things. Right. And she was able to feel better, have more energy till lunchtime, right? Lose weight in the process, right? Because she didn't need to snack on the simple sugars from M&Ms, right? So these are just two of the cases, the examples that I have. But, you know, one of the things that you said earlier about, you know, blood sugar stability and addiction is that a lot of times, like with this second lady having to have that mid-morning snack, and maybe she's feeling like, oh my goodness, like I'm addicted. I can't stop, you know, eating these M&Ms, but it's that sugar dip. So you have something that's super refined, right? It's not bulky. It's mainly starch, no fat. It shoots your blood sugar up, right? But then our body's tendency is to keep blood sugar levels at this nice, normal, you know, 120, whatever level. And so it's going to do whatever it takes to bring it back down. And in bringing it from such a high back down, it's perceived as a sudden drop. And that sudden drop, even if it's not low, but relative to where it was, that's going to cause that craving. It's like, oh my goodness, it came down too quickly. Let me have something. And that's why, you know, individuals would find themselves on this perpetual cycle of cravings, having candy throughout the day, sipping on juice or soda constantly throughout the day. So they're constantly having these sugar spikes because of the ups and downs, you know? So, yeah.
You know, sometimes it's like chasing a tiger. You're just running in circles and not going anywhere at all. And, you know, people, this usage of continuous glucose monitors become just a popular thing. And I'm like, do we really? We know the stuff which is high in sugar. And we know if I eat M&Ms, my sugar, blood sugars are going to spike. And if I'm going to eat like the meal you were talking about, more wholesome with good fats, etc., my sugars are going to be low. Sometimes I feel like we replace technology and not use common sense for simple stuff, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately. And I've had people tell me, some patients have said that they it's so sad too, because you would think that continuous glucose monitor would be the tool to get you back on the right trend once and for all, right? But they would wear it and see the high numbers and do it for like 2 weeks, 4 weeks maybe, and then they just take it off and they stop wearing it because it's as if they just don't want to see it. Yeah, they don't want to see it, and they're still at square one where they were, right? So that's why I think that it's just beyond knowing. And you're right when you said, Rasi, that they need to have that strong reason, right? But I think it's just a multifactorial issue, right? Problem to resolve, to fix.
You know, there's no one nutrition plan or one method, you know, the so-called different diets. whether it's an anti-inflammatory diet, whether it's a ketogenic diet, or whether it's a paleo diet, or whatever it is, the basic principles, or Mediterranean diet even for that matter, the basic principles of all these diets is the same, which is pretty much what you have summarized in BEAM, like, right? You know, build muscle, eat less sugar, absorb less sugar, and, you know, manage your stress pretty much. So, you know, you are an infectious disease doctor, but do you work with patients with high sugar, or how do you integrate this into your practice?
Sure. So outside the hospital, I basically coach with blood sugar management, right? So I do, you know, web classes, and then I have a 12-week coaching program, Blood Sugar Mastery Bootcamp. But yeah, I don't do one-on-one coaching now. But yeah, I have a boot camp that I'm enrolling, just about to actually enroll in that boot camp. And it's really to go through, get the support going, right? It's group coaching, because obviously, well, not obviously maybe, but generally speaking, the benefit is greater with group coaching when you learn from others and people ask questions that they didn't think to ask and so on and so forth, right? But basically that's to get the participants on the road to mastery, because you're not going to learn it just from maybe you might learn from reading a book, right? But what I realize is that most people need that ongoing support. They might get stuck or have questions as they're making the changes, because it's just so much. They want to ask about different labels and so on. So it's that ongoing support as they get on the road to mastery of the blood sugar levels, where they can make the decisions automatically, you know, without having to bat an eyelid, right? So that's what I do. I mean, I do locum medicine now, so that I have the ability in between to do the coaching, because I feel like this, you know, work outside of the hospital with really helping people to optimize their body in general is more impactful than, you know, I mean, I love the hospital, but boy, sometimes it's kind of too late by the time people get to the hospital. So that's great. And then of course, yeah. And then for, I mean, some people are able to read a book. Like I mentioned, I wrote the book Beaming Health.
I'll put the link on my, on the podcast show for sure.
Yeah, my brain in a book. So 20 years of experience so far as a doctor, I'm not done yet. And I basically took almost 2 years, a year and a half to write it. And it can be read in just over 2 hours. Written very, not in the complicated medical terms, because I wrote this for my patients, basically, with my patients in mind, and to have a reference, diagrams, charts, and so just diagrams, just simple illustrations to understand what's going on in your body. Because if you understand what's going on, you understand what different foods are doing, then you can make the decisions a little easier to the changes that need to be made, so that you can get the health you want in the long run. So yeah, but that's basically what I have available. So yeah, it's just an easy book, you know, a little $20 book to get a quick start, kickstart on health going forward.
So Dr. Goodwin, this has been a very interesting, very fabulous conversation. I completely enjoyed myself. I love your BEAM blueprint. How can my listeners find you if they want to get into your masterclass or bootcamp?
Yeah, they can. Well, essentially, they can follow me on social media. So YouTube is a good way to kind of get into my world. Amina Goodwin, MD on YouTube. On Instagram, it's Dr. Amina Goodwin. On Facebook, it's Amina Goodwin, MD.
So I want to thank Dr. Amina Goodwin for sharing her incredible insights on blood sugar management and the BEAM blueprint. The connection between metabolic health and resilience to infection is something I've observed in my own cardiology practice as well. So this reinforces how interconnected our systems are. And, you know, and you have to make a decision, and it is not the most impossible thing. As human beings, we are doing hard things every day, and it truly takes a choice to make a choice to kind of prioritize your health, and it's never too late to reboot your life. So if you have found this conversation extremely valuable or reasonably valuable, I encourage you to learn more about Dr. Goodwin's work through her website, her coaching programs, her boot camps. And by addressing the root cause of metabolic dysfunction, we can dramatically improve our health outcomes across multiple systems in the body. It's never too late to reboot your health and transform your life through informed lifestyle choices. Dr. Amina Goodwin, thank you so much. And for my listeners, I'm Dr. R.C. Marin. I will see you in the next episode.
Thank you for having me. Great conversation, Arasi. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to your audience.
Thank you so much for listening. If you found us valuable, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast app. And also, please consider leaving us a rating or a review, as that helps others find the podcast too. I hope you have a great week ahead.